Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Ray. You are listening to a least worst of The Doctor Is In. We have no best of, but this is truly one of our least worst.
I need you to knock some sense into me. I'm sure you can.
Yeah, I don't know.
I enjoy listening to you. I don't always agree with everything.
All right. Enough of this persiflage.
So, you want my question?
I'm certainly not going to get myself in trouble by telling you what to do.
That makes great sense. Gosh, that's good.
Did I overwhelm you with words and wisdom?
I've got 7 kids. I feel like I could call you every day.
Wait, you're telling me I'm wrong? Disconnect. Yes, I am,
Dr. Ray.
You just need to tune in to Dr. Ray, honey. He's got all the answers.
Am I right or am I wrong?
Probably.
Now, from the studios of Living Bread Radio Network in Canton, Ohio, the hometown of Mother Angelica, here's Dr. Ray.
Read about people who love to rough it. You know, they go out camping, gonna rough it, get away from the civilization and all the comforts of life. I kind of do that. I like roughing it. My idea of roughing is probably a little less than these people who go out into the wilderness for 9 days at a time. My idea of roughing it is turning the heating blanket down to medium. Yeah, they're living tough. And what I just did just now, I stopped and got a cup of coffee before the program, which I usually drink coffee in the program because it helps keep me awake while I'm talking. I listen to you guys. I'm awake listening to you, but I start to talk, I drift. And I stirred the coffee, not making this up, with a pen. I've not seen any surveys on this, but my guess would be 82.65934% of guys would think it's okay to stir coffee with a pen. 2.1% of women would think it's okay to stir coffee with a pen. And it was a pen that didn't have, you know, kind of like a rubber tip on it. So I don't know how it's going to write after this, but I do know that my coffee will have the right amount of cream and sugar. Thanks for joining me as I just simply gave you all that useless information you didn't need to know. I was just filling time. That's all I was doing. Number to get onto the program for the important stuff is you, 877-57-EQUAL. That is the number, 877-573-7825. I wish I could get to some of these emails that just pour in about this guest and that guest, and this is a person you want, and this is a person that's highly recognized. I don't know how to stop them. I want to say, I've got guests. You're my guests. And you're great guests. You know why? Because you're decent people. You call in with situations that pretty much everybody wrestles with at one time or another. Or you call in with stuff that is of relevance to folks, even though they may not have directly experienced it, they know somebody who did. So what I want to say is, please call 877-573-7825, 877-57-EQUAL. Don't have to be reluctant or ashamed, and they're not going to recognize your voice. That's the number one reason people email me and say, I can't call in because people that I know listen. Oh, come on. We have about 2 listeners in every city. Do you realize the odds of one other person listening in the same time you're calling, whether it's about a kid or an adult, circumstance, relationship, frustration, stuff about psychology you don't understand, even stuff about the faith you don't understand, especially as it intersects with psychology. You know, if you dream about something that is an egregious sin in your dream, well, does that mean that's what you really want to do, you know? Freud said dreams are the royal road to the unconscious. So maybe that's just exactly what you want to do, and the only thing stopping you is not morality or love for our Lord, it's getting caught. Well, no, I can dispel that if you'd call in and ask about it. 877-573-7825. Every so often, about once a year, I think, there's something called the World Happiness Report. And they do a wide range of questioning from folks. Just a boatload of countries, 100 and some. 156 is one report I read. and these are the results. Now, one global result And again, this is difficult to capture because it can be stretched into so many meanings. The U.S. ranks down toward the bottom in reported happiness of its people. Down toward the bottom. We are by far the richest country in the world. We are by far the most materially comfortable. Our poor, according to governmental statistics, our poor live better than the middle class in many developed countries. We have larger houses below the poverty line in our country, believe it or not, than, for example, Japan or places in Europe. I know people are going to say, Dr. Ray, come on, you're trivializing poverty. No, I'm not. I'm just simply saying that we have our poverty is wealth in many other places. So why are we so discontent? Well, obviously, materialism doesn't lead to contentedness. Those countries who are more content generally are the ones who are underdeveloped, as that word would be used. Poor, poverty. Let me give you just a few stats here, some of the things that are interesting. They found in this survey that people are too pessimistic about the benevolence of others. For example, when wallets were dropped in the street by researchers, the proportion of returned wallets was far higher than people expected or predicted. Now, why would that be? Well, of course, part of that is everything we watch is criminal. Everything we watch is nastiness. Everything we watch, well, maybe we don't watch it, but it's thrown at us through the media and through entertainment, is the ugliness of people. So the more you see that stuff, the more you're going to lose faith in mankind. Oops, oh, that slipped. I'm so sorry that slipped. I hope they don't take me off the air because of that. Personkind. Can't even say humankind because that's got man in it. And I can't even say person because that's got son in it. Peoplekind. Yeah, anyway. Our well-being depends upon our perception of others' benevolence as well as their actual benevolence. They say, since we underestimate the kindness of others, our own well-being can be improved by getting actual information, which is what I'm doing right now, about the kindness of others. And once again, our Lord is always reinforced, even though people don't read his book when they do these surveys, likely. When society is kinder, more benevolent, the people who benefit most are those who are least happy. Okay. And then finally, kindness to others increased during COVID-19 every place in the world. People needed more help, and others responded. Despite a fall from 23 to 24, benevolent acts are still about 10% above their pre-pandemic levels. The most universal example of how we care with each other is meals. Reader's Digest did a survey, long time ago, probably 20, 30, 40 years ago. Talked about school achievers, kids who did very, very well in school. And the one thing they found across the board that was a commonality: shared family meals. Now, let me see. They give you a statistic here on the percentage of people who eat alone. It was 19% in 2003, and it is now something like 20-some percent. No, that's wrong. 39%. Here it is. Let me get the exact stats here. United States. 2023, roughly 1 in 4 Americans reporting eating all their meals alone. Okay, that's where it was. An increase of 53% in the last 20 years. Dining alone has become more prevalent for every age group, but especially for young people. Woohoo! Countries where people share more meals tend to display higher levels of social support and positive reciprocity. Well, that's fancy talk, meaning we give and take a lot better. Wow. Anything else I want to share with you? Now, this is interesting. I don't know about this. All right. In Mexico and Europe, a household size of 4 to 5. So that would mean, let's just say 2 parents and 2 or 3 kids, or 1 parent and 3 or 4 kids, predicts the highest levels of happiness. Couples who live with at least one child, or couples who live with children and members of their extended family, have especially high average life satisfaction. People who live alone, lower levels of happiness. Now, this is, okay, this is might explain why many of you have 5, 6, 7 kids and you are extremely happy with your life. People in very large households can experience lower happiness, and they say, this is the conclusion of this people who authored this report, probably linked to diminished economic welfare. So perhaps around the world, it means that when you live in these huge, large, extended families, you're poorer. Okay. Latin American societies characterized by larger household size and strong family bonds offer great lessons. All right. Anything else here I want to see? Connecting with others, happiness of young adults. Oh, this is interesting. In 2023, 19% of young adults across the world reported having no one. Now that means parents that they could count on for social support. That's a 39% increase compared to 2006. Many young adults underestimate their peers' empathy, leading them to avoid connecting with others and missing out on opportunities for meaningful relationships. Kind of like, well, you know, you're not going to understand. Yeah, you know, you're not going to like me. So, I'm just not going to try to connect with you or get to know you. Whew. All right, a lot of stuff there. But the thing that disturbs me, that's a strong word, it doesn't disturb me. I'm not going to lose any sleep over it. It's not going to even bother me after I leave this program. But the thing that's interesting is that the U.S. is consistently ranked toward the bottom overall population happiness. A lot of factors for that. But I think a big one is when you expect more in terms of life materially, maybe otherwise, and it doesn't happen, you're unhappier. In many countries, they don't expect. Okay, just small thing. I am way past break here, and I'll get to your calls. Small thing. When I was growing up, now that was a generation or two. That was 2 generations ago. Now I got to start saying 2 generations ago. I used to say 1 generation ago. Now I got to say 2. We lived in a 1,200 square foot house. We were solidly middle class. We had, my dad worked in a factory, didn't make much. We had one new car, 1961 Ford station wagon, powder blue. I was so excited as a kid because I thought, man, everybody's looking at this thing. No air conditioning. Finally got air conditioning when I was in college in one room of the house. Mom didn't work. She worked for her brothers, who were accountants, and she was kind of an aide to their business. We were very middle class. You can't get anybody to build a 1,200 square foot house now. It's not going to happen. Nobody will be at all satisfied. You can live in a 1,200 square foot apartment, maybe a small condo, but as far as housing, not going to happen. By the way, what was the cost? Did my parents pay for that first house? Yeah, this will shake you up. $19,000. That's what they paid. Okay, just a little trip down memory lane. 877-57-EQUAL is the number to call to get onto the program. 877-573-7825. As always, I very much would like to talk to you.
You're listening to the least worst of The Doctor Is In with Dr. Ray Guarendi. So please, no calls at this time.
They asked Alan, age 10, how do you decide who to marry? He said, you got to find somebody who likes the same stuff. Like, if you like sports, she should like it that you like sports. And she should keep the chips and dip coming. There you go. Simple creature. Speaking of the antonym of a simple creature, Laura from Michigan is dealing with somebody that ain't so simple. Hi, Laura.
Hi, thanks a lot for taking my call.
Sure.
I am a caregiver, and I'm not a medical professional. I'm just helping with the activities of daily living. A couple of weeks ago, I picked up a new client. She is bedbound, and she had a bit of dementia from the get-go, but it's getting progressively worse. I mean, just within the past, I've only had her for less than a month, and it notably worsened. She only wants...
You're bad for her, Laura. You're bad for her. You're bad for her. I'm teasing.
Yeah, I guess so, because she certainly doesn't want me around.
Well, I want you around, Laura. Keep talking.
Well, thank you. Anyway, she only wants her family to take care of her, but that the reason I was hired on was to give them a bit of respite. And I completely get it. She basically has lost everything, and I'm the punching bag. I get it, but I don't know how to deal with the frustration. And also, I'm trying to redirect her. She gets on these loops, repeating the same question over again, making the same demands over again, despite everything I say. And I was just hoping you had some words of wisdom on how to deal with this.
Laura, well, first of all, I'm a little disappointed in the way you phrased that. You were hoping that I had some words of wisdom.
Well,
in other words,
I know you have.
In other words, not expecting me to have words of wisdom. You were grasping at the slim possibility I might have something to say. Is that what you're saying, Laura? Is that it?
Okay.
Okay, I'll accept that. Let's take this at several levels. One, we can't know how much the dementia is really, really shaping how she's interacting and how she's looking at life and how she thinks. You can't know it. So let's just assume it is. Let's assume the repetition and the argumentation and the total disgruntlement about life and you and everybody is just going to get worse. Okay. We got that. And the reason we got that is because it's going to change your expectation. Within your description of the scenario was, mm-hmm. How can she be different? How can I make her be less argumentative, less grumpy, less obnoxious, pushing me to the limit of my patience? And I'm not sure you can. Okay, so that's, once you expect that, you're not going to be quite as frustrated. Another level.
Okay.
Another level. One, don't argue with her about anything. And don't correct her about anything. If she says, well, did you get me that? And you say, yes, I did get you that. I've gotten you that 3 times. Don't, oh, you do that. Forget it. Forget it. Because in her mind, you didn't get it 3 times. It's brand new. So mm-hmm. try not to correct her. That'll just make her mad. Okay? You're challenging her.
Mm-hmm.
Now, let's on to maybe what we can do to make her a little less obnoxious. If you notice something, for example, I watch a lot of these kind of crime dramas, and typically mm-hmm. when somebody goes into the house, they look at the pictures in the house to get some indication of this person's mm-hmm. life. If you notice, say, for example, 2 kids in her front room in a picture, you grab it and you say, are these your children? No, meaning 30, 34, 35 year old, whatever. And then get her to reminisce about the past. Because all those memories are probably still pretty clear.
Okay. Yeah, I have been trying to do that, but she's getting less able to do that.
Mm-hmm. And that's part of that declining cognitive ability.
Yeah.
I think at this point, at some point, Laura, you're going to just be there to, well, in so many words, almost sit by. You can't do much because she won't let you do much. And
right.
You'll just be sitting there.
Kind
of. Is there anything I can get you? No, I want my family here. Well, they'll be coming soon. Rather than, well, they're not here right now. I'm here to take care of you. No, don't correct her. They'll be coming soon. Kind of thing. To lower your own frustration, my dear, you got to, because she's not going to change. But
okay.
you can wherever possible. I play the organ at a nursing home, and mm-hmm. it's a heavy memory care. I mean, most of the folks there are long since able to take in their surroundings and make sense of them. But it's amazing how when I play certain songs, especially from their era, you watch them. They just come alive. They soften. They look up. Before, they're looking straight down at their food and they're not aware of anything around them. Or you see a toe moving and tapping. Or you see somebody mouthing words from when she was 22 years old. And they say to me, how do you know those old songs? And I'll say, yeah, they were popular when I was young. But that's what you do. You kind of look around the house for clues as
right.
to what her past might have been like. You say, was this where you used to live, this house here? Tell me about it. Okay, a caller just called in and suggested, yeah, there's a book written about dealing with folks with progressive dementia. It's called The 36-Hour Day. Yeah, that's a kind of like the Bible of that stuff, and it's got a lot of ideas in it, too. Laura, thank you so much. And by the way, thank you for what you do, because that is a beautiful work of mercy. Even though you're getting paid for it, you're not getting paid enough, so the rest of it's counted as mercy. Thank you, dear. 877-573-7825. You guys make time go so fast here. I look at the clock, and it's already break time.
You are listening to the least worst of The Doctor Is In with Dr. A. Grandy. So please, no calls at this time.
The Doctor Is In. Co-production, Ave Maria Radio Communications and the EWTN, Global Catholic Radio Network. Let me double check this here. I want to find out. Hold on. Get this down here. Up. To search, I don't know what I'm doing half the time. I need a kid here. Where's Tom? All right, so we got some family events coming up, and I want to read these. Today is Wednesday. This is really cool who we got going on here. If you are listening in Oregon, your EWTN radio station needs to hear from you. Next week, Mater Dei Radio. They are something there. They've been around a long time. We'll be airing their spring share-a-thon, Return to God's Mercy. That's starting Monday. So you're in Eugene, Oregon, Vancouver, or anywhere. Give them your support. You can't give more money for a better reach than Catholic media. Karen from Canton, Ohio. Karen, do I know you?
You know, I have called before, and every time you think you might know me.
You know, that was what I used to, in college. I'd go up to a really cute girl and say, do I know you? And she'd go, no, you don't. You don't. And you've said that four times to me. Quit it. So, yeah. So it's kind of a deja vu here, Karen. So
well,
what's up?
I did go to Little Flower when I was younger, so maybe from there. But, my question is, my daughter, she took early college classes while she was in high school, and now she's finishing up her associate degree, and somehow through all that education, she wasn't ever able to schedule a psychology class.
Does she need
and
one?
And I really thought she, what's that?
Does she need one?
Apparently, no.
I'm hurt. I'm hurt and insulted.
Well, yes, and I also feel like there's something missing from her education not having that. She actually
might be,
Karen,
it might be good. Don't be too quick to think that what she missed is deleterious. It might be beneficial.
Well, she actually had signed up for an online psychology class, and then she notoriously is not good with online classes, so then she dropped it and didn't tell me.
Well, that's bad psychology.
So when I did find out, I said, well, you know, I'm just going to have to call Dr. Ray about this.
What, do you want me to yell at her?
And of course she was mortified that I would call you.
She probably went, ew.
She actually listens to you with me when she's at home.
So. Well, here's the thing about a general psych class. It's going to be a very broad-based class. They'll have a section on abnormal psych. They'll have a section on physiological psych. They'll have a section on personality psych. They'll have a section on the history of psych. So it's just a very general type class. Most people find it interesting, but for the most part, you can't use it in life and in understanding people because it's too general, it's too generic. And if anything, Karen, this has been my experience, so this should put your mind at ease, psychologically speaking. If anything, what it does is it makes you kind of an amateur psychologist and you don't know the limits of your lack of knowledge and you say things that just really don't fit well. So if you're saying, I think a psychology class would help my daughter understand people, understand her life, understand a lot of things better, I'm saying no. It would be an interesting journey through a lot of that stuff because people find it fascinating. But other than that, really wouldn't equip her. Okay, let me share with you something that's going to shock you. You ready?
Okay, I'm ready.
All right, I got a PhD. I would say that what I know now in the psychology world, the therapy world, my PhD accounts for about somewhere between 5 and 10% of it. The rest of it is experience. The rest of it is self-taught. The rest of it is reading. The rest of it is self-knowledge. The rest of it is listening. Much of what I learned as a PhD, I don't even use. It was personality psychology. It was the history of psychology. I had 5 semesters of statistics. So in that sense, if that's your motive, is it your motive that you wanted to kind of understand things better?
Yeah, I wanted to like have a different perspective on life and maybe try to think about how other people are thinking maybe.
Well, general psych wouldn't do that.
Yeah.
It's not. If you want her to do that, she's going to have to take some quote-unquote counseling courses. The problem with those are they're very secular, very, very secular. So they're probably not going to mesh well if she has a religious worldview.
She ended up taking a lot of sociology classes.
Oh, that'll do it too.
That'll do it. Secular,
yeah.
As you
yep,
say.
They are heavily. Sociology may be even more secular than psychology. Does she still like her religion?
Yes.
Oh, good. All right. So she navigated through it. But I can't tell you how many college kids will say to me, I'm taking psychology and the things they want me to accept and believe go categorically counter to my deepest held faith beliefs. What do I do? They want me to regurgitate this. And I say, well, keep your head down and make the case as best you can for where you stand, but you may have to just get through it. So I think what we can do is take away your question that somehow this will better make her able to relate to people, better make her understand life if she takes one general psych class? Not likely. If anything, it'll probably make her a little too quick to overanalyze.
Okay. Well,
all right.
Do you have any books you recommend?
All of mine, of course. I do have a book that might specifically relate to her, and I just found out that I got the sales stats on this book. This book jumped ahead of another book. It's called Jesus, the Master Psychologist. And it's a nice little, I think it answers what you would like for your daughter more than anything else. I take 18 of our Lord's prescriptions for better living, and I come at them from a psychological perspective. Why do they work? Jesus, the Master Psychologist, and its companion is Thinking Like Jesus, the Psychology of a Faithful Disciple. So both of those, I think, would answer much better what you're wanting your daughter to experience than a general psych class. You get them at my website, Dr.
Graduation gift.
Yeah, go to drray.com. They're discounted and they are signed.
Okay.
And my wife handles all the bookstore stuff. Thanks, Karen. You call anytime, dear.
All right. Thank you.
All right. Bye, honey. 877-573-7825. And I just did two things that I'm going to get email about. I said, thanks, dear. And I said, call anytime, honey. Oh, man. I'm allowed to do that because I'm older now. You can do that when you're older. You can. And you can also do that when you're down at Birmingham Airport, because those ticket ladies always say, see you, sweetie. I say, thanks. Hi, everybody. This is Dr. Ray. You are listening to a least worst of The Doctor Is In. We have no best of, but this is truly one of our least worst. One of the great privileges of my life, being here with you guys. Oh, can't say guys. You people. If I was going to say guys and gals, that was a really nice musical, but you can't say that now. Now you can't say that at all. It's just like peoples and peoples, the new uptake of the musical. Before I get to Jackie, she is a pa. I always love it when these people say this. Jackie, you're a ma, really. Oh, that's Pennsylvania, PA. Okay, got it. I play trivia on Wednesday nights. A lot of fun. But what I have found with playing trivia, both my wife and I, is how completely ill-informed I am for pop culture. I don't know who many of the actors are. I don't know the songs, for sure. I don't know the TV shows. And this stretches back. This goes back to probably 30, 40 years ago, where I just basically stopped watching TV and mostly spent time clinical work or writing or doing the stuff of Catholic media. So Jackie's got a question for me, and I'm hoping that Jackie fleshes it out, because if she doesn't, I'm dead in the water. Hi, Jackie.
Hi, Dr. Ray. I just have two comments. One, you might not be able to, since you're not familiar, I've kind of stopped watching television as well as I'm getting older, but there was a show called Frasier that was on years ago.
I remember that.
And I wondered if you ever
Kelsey
watched
Grammer,
it.
Kelsey Grammer, I believe, is a kind of a Christian sort of fella.
Yeah, yes, he has. He had a very strange, tragic life, but anyway, I personally don't know anything about psychology, but I think that some of the master, quote-unquote, psychologists are a little bizarre, like the things you read about Freud. I don't understand how, you know, I don't know why they're so popular. Maybe there's, you know, obviously you would know that, but I wondered what you thought of that, the show Frasier, and because he seemed to be a little messed up himself, being a psychologist.
Well, first of all, I want to compliment you, Jackie. Because
why?
You said, obviously, you would know that. I like that kind of staunch affirmation, not doubting, not hoping I would know it, but obviously. So that's really good. You could have said clearly you would know that. You could have said certainly you would know that. Most assuredly you would know that. And then, okay, so just you listeners, just take Jackie here as a template. It is a cliche, but it's got truth to it, that sometimes people go into psychology and psychiatry because they themselves are struggling. I don't know how true that is, but I do know this, Jackie. I talked about it. I don't know if you were listening the last call. I talked about my own PhD. And I didn't say this, Jackie, but much of my education was very secular, at a very secular university. And I spent about half my time in my classes with one eyebrow skeptically raised, thinking, you don't actually think this is realistic, do you? You don't actually think this is how people function, do you? So you're right. I think there's a lot of stuff in modern psychology and psychiatry, for all the understanding that it has. And again, it has. We've come some great distances in understanding the psyche, especially from people like Freud and some of those old-time therapists and personality theorists. But at the same time, we stretch to understand, and in so stretching, we break the bonds of reality. So you're right. Mm-hmm. I think what they did with Frasier, and I remember Frasier when he was on Cheers, which is about the time when I stopped really watching network shows.
Mm-hmm.
Frasier on Cheers was kind of this pretentious, hyper-intellectual psychiatrist. I remember one particular show that he and Lilith were extremely distressed because they found out through testing that their young son was average. They couldn't handle it. So really, you're right. There's a lot of poking fun at, sometimes very deserved, at the profession of psychology, psychiatry. My experience has been, I said this to my wife today. I had a lady email me or something this morning about this 13-year-old kid that she just flat out couldn't handle anymore. The kid was just violent and awful to her. And I remember thinking, this is just an epidemic, that this in human history, I got to believe, has never happened, that so many kids, young kids, out of control. And I remember thinking, what's one factor in this? And one of the factors is, I believe, psychology, psychiatry, with so many theories and notions that are enlightened, so to speak, that have gotten parents twisted all around. I see it. I get all kinds of very intelligent people in my office. Highly educated folks. And this 6-year-old is just driving them nuts. And as I listen to them, much of the time I hear them trying to follow the current enlightened psychological parenting notions. It's messing them up. So, sorry for the long response to that, Jackie. Anything else you wanted to ask me about all that?
No, that was great. I expected nothing less of you than to be skeptical as a young student. And I think that was the Holy Spirit in you, making sure that, you know, you were going to choose a career that was going to honor God. So that's all I wanted to say. You have a great day. Thanks.
Well, can I give you an example of something that happened?
Sure.
I minored in counseling. I thought, okay, I'm going to be clinical psychologist. Now, in those days, clinical psychologists were supposed to wear two hats. One as a therapist, one as a researcher. So we had to take a lot of research courses. But we had to take a minor, and I minored in counseling. So I wanted to take counseling classes. Now, counseling classes, as I went through them then, were flakier even than some of the psychology classes I got. This one counseling class, I was sitting there. Now, we didn't sit in chairs. You didn't sit in chairs in counseling. You sat with your back against the wall in a circle. It's a rule. So the professor said that we take in information the same way we eat food. if we chew our food a little bit and then swallow it in large chunks, we're not a discriminating person. If we chew and chew and chew and chew and chew our food, puree it before we swallow it, obviously we are overthinking. I raised my hand and I said, this is theory. Is there any research that makes this correlation? And he said to me, you ready, Jackie? He said to me, Ray, I noticed that you're leaning backward. Your body language suggests that you're not sure of your question. Okay, so I leaned forward. Then he said, now, that's an aggressive posture. That's an aggressive posture. It's a challenging posture. So I tried to stay up. I sat up kind of straight, you know, kind of sitting up straight. Had my legs crossed. And he said, I noticed that your legs are crossed. Is this some type of ambivalence? I gave up, Jackie. I gave up. I just never got an answer. So I went into, I should have done this, I didn't do it. I went into his class, the next class, and I was chewing on a peanut butter and jelly sandwich. And I chewed on it the whole time I was in there. Just to kind of send the message that I overthink. Thank you, dear. I'll talk to you.
You're welcome. Thanks.
See
Take
you.
Care.
Bye. Okay.
Bye-bye.
Oh, I hate to leave the callers. All right. One last number. You can get on anytime. 877-57 equals the number. Dr. Ray.
Is this the Dr. Ray?
Hey, you're listening to the least worst of the Dr. Is In with Dr. Ray Guarani.
You know, girls look at this whole marriage thing a bit different. They asked Kristen, age 10, how do you decide who to marry? She said, nobody really decides before they grow up who they're going to marry. God decides it. And then you get to find out later who you're stuck with. Mm-hmm. I don't know if that's gender-norming shaping or just a natural byproduct of the way we are wired. Want to just piggyback a little bit on our previous caller. She was a delight. Back in, oh boy, I don't want to give the decade. Let me put you this way. I was a freshman when Sigmund Freud was a senior. But I worked at a mental health center for 10, 12 years. Even then, even just coming out of school. And this was a long time ago. This is 30, 40 years ago. I was shocked at the insecurity, the second-guessing, the questioning, the uncertainty, the lack of resolve, the corroded authority among so many parents who were coming to me. Many of them were not bad parents at all. But they just were frustrated, exasperated in raising their child or children. And I thought, is this a phenomenon that my profession is not seeing? How can I see it so clearly? Or am I looking for it? And it's not really that clear, it's just that I'm hyper-attuned to it. Well, not so long later, there was a massive survey done by Focus on the Family. Remember James Dobson? He was kind of like the early guru in parental authority. You know, he wrote The Strong Will Child and all that. And I remember listening to Dobson, and they said one of the things that they were shocked at finding in their survey, something like 33,000 responses, the insecurity among their parents. And I remember, I was in the car when I heard it. And I don't think they heard me because I said it real loud so they could hear me, but I doubt that they did. I said, why are you so shocked? Most of his parents, you could assume, are younger. In many ways, they were religious, of course. It's the program. Of all people, you would think that they would very much be relaxed and enjoying of this whole child-rearing journey, but instead, what they found was insecurity and second-guessing and tentativeness. I wanted to write a book about this, but I didn't really know where to begin. And everything I had read, and back then, there was no really Amazon distribution. So if you're going to write a book, you had to get a publisher. And if you went to what they called a vanity press, and you got them to print your book, that was kind of like, yeah, right, nice. A little pat on the head, you know, okay, fine, write your book, and then they'll print it for you, and they'll charge you a bunch of money, and then that'll be it. So I didn't want to go that route. I wanted to try to get a publisher. But everything I researched said, don't, you're not going to get one. You've not even written any articles, and I hadn't written any popular articles at that time. You had no media experience other than secular. I just started doing some secular media, but other than any kind of program like this, I didn't have anything like that. So essentially, I was a psychologist in a mental health center in a rural community, Columbiana County. I sent my letter off about what I was finding among my clients. A large New York publisher wrote back and accepted the book. I was shocked. And I remember thinking, I must have hit a nerve among the very people that would be most vulnerable to all the psychological correctness floating around. They were well-educated. They were urban. Probably read like crazy. They were in the publishing world. It's the only thing that could explain my first book, You're a Better Parent Than You Think. And I remember my editor had a couple of young kids. I think I must have touched a chord with him. But I think it's only gotten more confusing since then. Now, I'm not saying the experts can't give you some good ideas. Yeah, of course. Sort through them. Decide what works for you. Decide what makes sense. That's a big key there. But all too often, when an expert comes across as, my way is the psychologically right way, and if you don't do it my way, let me tell you all the bad stuff that's going to happen to your kid, immediately be suspicious. Ah, that's enough of that. Thanks for joining me. Appreciate it so very, very much. Walk with God, that's really psychologically correct. If you're looking for infinite psychological correctness, that's the walk you want. Take your kids along with you if you're still raising them. Thanks for joining me.
For information on Dr. Ray's presentations, books, and CDs, visit drray.com and follow him on Facebook and Instagram. The Doctor Is In is a co-production of Ave Maria Radio and EWTN Radio and carried across the EWTN Global Catholic Radio Network.